the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL Wire site that covers your Arizona Cardinals. And with me is co-host Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site, as we've been off for a couple of weeks, and we'll be off for another couple of weeks as we've hit the dead part of the offseason. I'm going to be traveling, Seth's going to be traveling, and so we're just doing stuff. So you'll get a little bit of time off. I might have a show later this week that I will have pre-recorded with Howard Balzer. Depends if he gets back with me on that. But this is episode 544, talking about OTAs. Seth, we are almost done with the voluntary part of the offseason, and it has been quite notable that everyone of note, of importance, has been in participation. In particular, one Buda Baker, who sat out all the voluntary work last year, asked for a trade, wanted a new contract, wanted to be paid a lot, when ultimately he wanted his money guaranteed, which he got last year, got a little bit of a signing bonus, got his guaranteed money last year, then had, you know, Pro Bowl incentives and per game active roster bonuses, and a $400,000 workout bonus, which is, we talked about, is probably the main catalyst why he has been in participation to the offseason program. But he addressed the media on Monday after practice, the final Monday practice of OTAs, and talked about, I started the line of questioning about his contract status, how he's entering this year, and what he wants moving forward. And I guess we probably shouldn't be surprised by it, but he's happy to be here. He wants to be a Cardinal. He said that. He said, I want to make this very clear. I want to be a Cardinal. He understands it's a business, and he's also not doing anything differently this year because even though it's a contract year, he said, that's my main goal every year. It's like, I treat every year like a contract year. I treat every single year like a contract year. For me, I love this game. I played at a high level each and every week because of the work I put in each and every week. I'm an honest believer in controlling what I control. I can control and do my job. At the end of the day, everything else will take care of itself. Anything about that, anything about what you heard Buda say that stands out to you from what we got yesterday?
Not really. I mean, you just look at it. It's pretty, what's the word I'm looking for? It's a pretty, you know, boilerplate stuff. He was very politically correct in everything he kind of said to make sure everybody knows that he wants to be an Arizona Cardinal for life, and, you know, all the good buzzwords he hit. And it's not that I don't believe him, because I do. There's no reason not to. It's one of those things that's like, you know, I don't know if, and I thought him, you know, kind of addressing that it's a different group was probably the telltale sign, right? Like, it's not that he doesn't know where he stands. It's just that he doesn't necessarily know if he is valued in the same way that he was under with Steve Keim in control, you know, and obviously different coaching groups, but with Steve Keim there, you know, Monty and Jonathan Gannon are going to build the team in the direction that they feel is best. And that's kind of where you see maybe uncertainty. And I think maybe even you look at it and you go, at least he acknowledges that, right? Like, hey, these aren't the guys that drafted me, that have re-signed me multiple times. Like, this is a new group of guys. They're going to do their thing, and you know, I want to be a part of it. And I think that's, like I said, the politically correct statement in that, yeah, I want to be part of it, but I'm not going to, you know, worry if I'm not, sort, so to speak, right?
Yeah. One thing I found kind of interesting is what he said about being able to speak up. Like, everyone in the locker room, there's different than, and you think about it, like on the defensive side of the ball, You're like, I don't know if this was in reference to the previous coaching staff, previous players, but like he says, there's more freedom to say what you need or want to say, no matter who you are on the roster. That was the one thing that was kind of interesting, because last year, like, come on, last year Buddha was the man on that defense. There was nobody. There was no, like, unless it was in reference to before. And maybe with a JJ in the building, maybe with Cliff, maybe with Klein, I don't know.
But I've also, we've heard that Vance Joseph is not very open to suggestions, right? Or things like that, that he's kind of, and I've said this a million times, like there are two type of coaches and there's more than two, but like there's two type of coaches that have success. There are coaches that are like, this is how we do it. You know, this is my way, blah, blah, blah. But then there are coaches that are willing to and able to take constructive feedback from those around them. And one of the things that we've heard about Vance Joseph, and we're never in the building or in the meetings and things like that, so we really have no idea if they're true or not, is that, you know, you did what Vance wanted. Like, it was Vance's way or the highway. And I mean, if that's it, then, you know, that while I had my struggles with how Vance Joseph did things, at least he's living and dying by the sword that he, you know, that he wants. Like, he's the one making the decisions, and he's saying, this is what I want. This is how I want things done. Like, do it or it's not going to work. And you know, you live with the consequences, and, you know, him having gotten let go.
And this isn't to say that he doesn't tailor things in some ways to players, but it's all within the construct of his structure. He believes in a Wade Phillips, and Wade Phillips was the same way, honestly.
Right.
There is a set system on how things are done, and you'll tailor things to within that scheme to players, but they're not going to drastically change the scheme or what they do for players. So you find players to match them rather than matching what you do with the players that you got, I guess.
Right, exactly. And that's one of the things, I mean, we pondered as soon as Gannon and Rallis, to an extent, were hired, of like, okay, what are they going to do? And, you know, it just seemed like Gannon adapted from the jump, right, of like what he did in Philly, and he has some things that he wants to do, and he brought, obviously, because you're white, and has some ideas, but he also was like, well, I don't have, you know, Fletcher Cox and Josh Sweat and Hassan Reddick and two very good corners. Like, I got to tailor my defense to what I have more. And that's, you know, and that's adaptability that you talk about, and an ability to change based on personnel and things like that. Whereas we've always said, like, there were some square peg round hole instances with Vance previously. And, you know, so, but also, again, I take, and it's not in a negative way towards Buddha by any means, but I always take this stuff with a grain of salt. Like, this is a guy that, you know, has admittedly wants to get paid again, and understandably. And he's kind of seen the safety market and how it's gone, right? Like, outside of Antoine Winfield, these guys aren't getting that bread like he had been. So he's got to be selective and cautious with how he is espousing his things, right? And what he's doing. So we'll see, we'll see what that leads to this year, if it leads to a great year, and then if it leads to an extension, or if this is the new group and they're like, hey, like, it's not a Buddha thing, it's a safety thing. Right, like,
yeah, well, kind of like what they completely undid their inside linebacker room last year. Like, they moved Zaven outside, they moved Simmons to safety, and we thought like all offseason, oh, the linebacker room's in good shape. We were gonna have a 4-3 defense, and it was gonna be Kaiser in the middle. You're gonna have Zaven on the Hassan side, and Simmons playing the Kaiser role that he had in Philly. And then, no, in fact, most of the time, they played with only one inside backer on the field when they played with their five-man front in nickel.
Right. And so, you know, you look at it, how does that work out? How does that change things? And what happens is, as this moves forward. So we'll see as it unfolds, because I think that's the only thing we can do at this point. I mean, you know, you're hearing all the right things, which is a positive. He's not disgruntled, right? Like, this isn't a quiet holdout or a quiet sit-in, whatever they call it. And you know, there's not extracurricular things going on right now. So I think from the net, you have to look at it and go, I think things are okay.
Yeah. Well, and but, I think, you know, it also helped the fact that the safety market really did poorly. All those veteran safeties getting cut. Buddha looking for the payment that, like, aside from Antoine Winfield Jr. getting paid, he wasn't going to get the contract that he was seeking to begin with. So,
no, and that's the thing is, you know, I think a lot of times what happens in a good way, positive way, is that, you know, guys go, this is what I want, and you go, okay, and then the things happen, and people go, yeah, I don't want that, because what I was expecting to happen is now not happening at all, right? Like, and you look at it, I mean, this is, it's crazy to look at the numbers, right? But the reality of the fact that you have, you know, 2024 cap hits, Buda Baker's number 3 in safeties, 2024 total cash, Buda Baker's number 4 in safeties, and then 2024 base salary, Buda Baker's number 2. Like, those are that it, the fact that that contract was signed, and I know they redid, but like, that contract was signed so long ago, and he's still top five in all the categories.
And you know, it's crazy. We know how important Buda, and Buda Baker is one of the better safeties in the NFL. But he affects things differently than other safeties, because if you look at Pro Football Focus, you look at Touchdown Wire, anything that has anything analytics-based as safety, Buda never makes a top safety list. Even though league-wide he's viewed by coaches and players as one of the best safeties in the league, he never gets that outside love. And so he's a special player in that sense, because you watch him play and you know that he's making an impact, but you also then you look at certain things in terms of pass protect, pass coverage, and analytics like that, and he just doesn't move the dial for a lot of people outside of Arizona.
Right, and that makes it difficult to judge and grade him. And, you know, that's why it's always funny when fans are like, well, you got to get like a, you know, a first or a second for Buda. It's like, I mean, if you got a third, and I'm not advocating trading him, but that's the market, right?
Like, yeah, which means we're probably going to get a third round pick in 2026 off of a compensatory selection is probably what's going to end up happening. Just because, like, doesn't it feel, and this is weird, for me, because Buda's so much younger. Like, he's still got years before he hits that age that you're like, yeah, I don't want him back. And it feels like the one thing I didn't get asked, and I wanted to, but the conversation went in a different direction, and then Buddha's time was up. I didn't ask if there have been any initial extension talks with his agent. And so that's the one thing we were not able to ask, and I wished we could have done. But it'll be interesting, because it feels like Patrick Peterson and Chandler Jones all over again, even though he's younger.
Right, exactly.
Coming up next on the Rest of the Year podcast, Mr. Cardinals Talk of the Web, let's move on to talking about OTAs, what's coming on. That with that, we talked about position battles. Let's talk about the playing rotation we hope to see this coming season. That's coming up on the Rest of the Year. We're back on the Rise of Syria podcast, best of Cardinals talk on the web, dealing with OTAs. Mini camp starts next week, and what we're going to talk. We talked about on our last show. Kind of the position battles and things that we're looking at. But let's kind of go through some of the positions and talk about what we hope. We can talk about what we project will be and what we hope would happen with the playing rotation. So let's go for that. I think quarterback, we're set, right? We don't need to talk about quarterback. If it's anyone other than Kyler Murray, trouble. Even though Desmond Ridder, as a backup quarterback, he's a very middling quarterback, maybe mediocre, but he's got nearly a 500 record. That would be a drastic improvement over what the Cardinals have had in the past. That said, James Conner, running back, is going to be the starter. Who do you hope, like who do we think and who do we hope is going to be the main guy behind him?
I think at this point you have to hope it's Trey Benson, right? Like you have to hope that Benson is the guy behind James Conner, and that he has the workload is where it gets tricky, right? Because like you don't want necessarily to overwork a rookie unless he's the guy, but then also you're like, you know, can you figure out if he's the guy without it? It's an interesting quandary that they put themselves in. But you have to look and say, we hope that it's, you know, 70 James Conner, 25 Trey Benson, and 5 everybody else, or maybe it's 60 and 30 and 10, right? Like that's the rotation you're kind of hoping for, that Benson is good enough to do that.
Yeah, I would agree. I would hope Trey Benson gonna be the guy. I think he'll probably be the guy, but that rotation is very intriguing to me because of the players they got. I mean, they gave DJ Dallas a 3-year deal. Do they, with the money that he's being paid, do they see him? They're paying him as if he's more than just special teamer. Like they kind of expect him to do something in terms of offense in the running back room. Amari DiMercato, we saw what he did last year, and Michael Carter is also pretty accomplished as well. So I'm leaning both think and hope that it's Benson, I think. But we'll wait and see. He's still got to sign his contract too, so there's that.
I know, right? All the hullabaloo about our good buddy Marvin Harrison Jr. And meanwhile, Trey Benson hasn't signed.
And Howard explained that in an article that he wrote for Cards Wire, that it's more about, it's not about guaranteed money because he's a third round pick, but it has to do with slotting where his 2025 salaries are and beyond. Because if you're drafted in the third round, you get more than the league minimum. Fourth round picks and on, their salary is a league minimum every year. That's easy. So it's just about, it's a matter of verbiage, whether there is a split on their contract, whether, like, if they make injured, if they're on injured reserve, whether it's their full salary or whether it's $470,000, which is usually the split salary. For third rounders, you have to negotiate those future year salaries, and they slot kind of in there, but that's kind of where it is. It's like last year, the issue was second round picks and how much guarantees or how many years are guaranteed. And this year it is the third round picks and the salary slots that they make beyond that. So I don't think it's gonna be a problem. I just think there's a little bit of back and forth and waiting for the picks behind him, perhaps, to get their deals.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, and it's tough when you're, you know, one of the first guys off the board at your position too, right? Because then there's not a whole lot of to go off of.
Yeah. And we go to the wide receiver room. If we're talking top three, who do you think will be the top three in the rotation?
It's tough because you go, I mean, I, with the Zay Jones contract, you're assuming that he's going to be involved in the top three. But is that to push Dortch or Michael Wilson off the field in 11, you know, personnel? It's, so that's where the question becomes, because you have to figure Connor, McBride, and Marvin Harrison are going to be on the field. So from there, it's like, is it going to be Zay Jones and Michael Wilson? Is it going to be Zay Jones and Greg Dortch? Is it going to be Greg Dortch and Michael Wilson? I think it's going to be Zay Jones and Michael Wilson. I think Dortch is going to be the fourth guy slash like main sub that allows them to bounce Wilson and Jones around and Harrison around as needed.
I would agree. As to what I want, and honestly, what I would want is Wilson to emerge as a clear number two. That I would love to see that happen organizationally. Marv's going to be the X. I'd love for Wilson to be okay. He establishes himself as clear number two. After that, whether it's Zay or whether it's Dortch, it doesn't matter. I don't care either way, but I think it will probably be more like what you say. So it'll be 1-2-3, Harrison, Zay, then Wilson, with Dortch being the fourth guy slash, you know, maybe it's because his build won't do it, but last year how they used Rondale Moore a little bit in the backfield as a running back, I wonder if they feel that Dortch has that same ability or not.
Right, exactly. So it'll be interesting to see where and how it all kind of plays out, because it is just actively like different to see where these guys end up and how they're gonna really deploy them. I mean, the biggest thing that we've talked about too is going to be the health of Michael Wilson and Zay Jones, because there's right. two guys that have been actively injured over the last several years.
Yeah, and I can't tell you. So I've seen the rotations. I can't say anything about the rotations right now. Just by what's out. What we can say at left guard is that there is evidence put out there by the team, thanks to some practice. Now, again, it's just a rep, but from the evidence at the rep that looks like Evan Brown is the leader at left guard. We know the rest of the room, but who do you think will be the left guard ultimately, and who do you want the left guard to be?
I think it's going to be Evan Brown. I would love for it to be Isaiah Adams, meaning that he's ready, not in the sense of that he's the best of a bad bunch. But I think it's going to be Evan Brown. I think their goal is to have Isaiah Adams ready next year. I think with that, you look at it too, that they are confident and slightly comfortable with what their depth looks like along the offensive line, which is different. Right? Like, I don't think we've really seen that, where they're confident and where their depth is along the line.
That would be fair to say. I think it'll be Evan Brown as well. I think there is a level of, as much as the, I think this might be a quiet, there's something that's, it's saying the quiet part out loud, while the Cardinals do believe, like, if it's not a first round pick, they're not dead set on pushing a rookie out there. And right. then Paris was like, you draft in six, you're going to put him out there. And honestly, he probably, like, Beecham wasn't any better. Like, at worst, Beecham wasn't equal. And so if you've got equal play, like equal play on the field, you go with the young guy, right? Because there's the potential for growth. But on the interior, like when they drafted Isaiah Adams in the third round, like you look at third round guys as maybe, but they made no plan. Like they basically re-signed everybody. They re-signed Elijah Wilkinson. They re-signed Tristan Colon. They brought back Carter O'Donnell. They haven't cut Dennis Daly yet. And then they signed Evan Brown. I really like the idea of having a vet right there, and especially one with experience. He's played right guard, he's played center, now he's going to play left guard. And I guess there's a part of me that would like to say, like, what I want. I guess it would be great if Adams came out and said, no, this is mine, and he was just mauling people. I mean, I can't predict. I can't in good faith predict that, because look at his last 2 years. He was a solid guard his junior season. And then he played right tackle last year, where he wasn't that good. And so I would have a hard time believing that he's going to come in and be
ready. Yeah.
Ready. Like, if we're saying, like, Paris at his talent level was at worst equal to Kelvin, I don't think Isaiah Adams there. I don't think he's even where you can say that he's equal with the guys that are already in the room. It is where he might become better, but he's not there yet.
Right. And that's where it, you know, that's where it's going to be interesting, because we have seen, even in recent years, like day two and even day three, interior offensive linemen earn starting positions along at all over the place, not just in Arizona, but, you know, all over the place. So it's not unheard of, but the Cardinals are doing everything in their power to make it where, like, he's not going to be the starter. And then if he just ends up winning the starting position,
well, that's great.
Like,
oh, that's great. If you can beat four veteran guys ahead of you, that's a good thing. That's a good thing. Especially when they're, when the three guys ahead of him, like two of the guys ahead of him were guys who have been either steady starters or pretty good starters. So it's like Wilkinson has been Wilkinson over his career has been a mostly starter, or at least an O-line six who gets a lot of starts because of injuries on a team. Brown has been a starter for like the last three seasons, but the last two at center.
Well, and this is like, and again, I'm not comparing straight across, so I don't want people to think this, but like, if you look at it, like last year, guys drafted in the same realm, Tyler Steen by the Philadelphia Eagles started one game, played in 11, started one. Wanye Morris, you know, drafted in the third round, started four games. Again, it's not like they were like, hey, let's get Wanye some starts, to just happen out of necessity, right? Ricky Stromberg drafted in the third round by a bad team. So first team that's bad in Washington, he didn't start. He played 28 total snaps all season. Nick Saldivari, who was a guy that a lot of people liked coming out last year, played in four games. He played 37 snaps all season. So like it doesn't mean anything if they don't play, but there is a chance that they could play. Like that's how you look at these things, and that's how you're like, okay, let's see how this goes. Because you have a, you know, on the flip side, you have a guy like DeJuan Jones who, you know, plays, you know, starts nine games, right? Like he plays pretty well. So on both sides of the coin, it can happen. It's just not necessarily a guarantee, and it's not a bad thing if it doesn't. And I think that's where people can struggle with that, is they're like, oh no, Isaiah Adams didn't start. It's like, no, that's fine. It's
that
not
was
a
kind of the plan. That was the plan.
Right. Now, you know, if it's year three and we're like, well, they got to bring back Evan Brown and Elijah Wilkinson, then you're like, okay, this is not going the way.
No, that's not the way how that should go. Tight end, we know that number one is going to be Trey McBride. And then you've got the mix of, I think, basically comes down to who's going to be two, who's going to be three, Elijah Higgins, Tip Ryman. Who do you think it's going to be? What do you think the order is going to be, and who do you want? What do you want that order to be?
It's just tough because they are two very different players, so they do very different things. I think Elijah Higgins is going to be the number two in terms of passing situations, and I think Tip Ryman is going to be the number two in terms of like when they're going to want to run the football. Not that they won't throw the ball with Tip in, or vice versa, but you know, I think it's one of those situations that I think we're going to have to judge at the end of the season by obviously health, but snap count, like how did that work out? If I had to guess, I would say Tip Ryman edges Elijah Higgins out in terms of snap count by the end of the season. But I think Elijah will probably be the guy earlier in the season, just unless Tip shows even more than what we're expecting him to be, which, you know, early is going to be a guy that is a six offensive lineman type. We expect him to eventually turn into more than that. But, you know, it's not like we're expecting it
right
tomorrow.
Right. It sounds like basically Tip Ryman perfectly is sliding into the role that Jeff Swaim had, which was mainly blocking tight end. Like he got, wait, did he, I can't remember. Did he have any catches last season?
Well, let's look. I got Pro Football Reference up right now.
Because I know there was one, like he had like a 15-yard catch in like week one, but it didn't count because there was a penalty. So, but I can't remember if he had any other catches.
He had 10 for 94 last year.
10 catches. So there, yeah, it sounds like
and that's in 8 games. So, you know, that's the expectation, like you said.
We look at the defensive line. Okay. This is an interesting one. I think that the starting lineup come week one, that it will end up being, I think it'll start off being Justin Jones, Bilal Nichols, and Roy Lopez. I think that's going to be the starting. That's my prediction, what I think it will be. I would love Darius Robinson to make the top three, but I don't just think he's going to do it. But if I had to pick, I would want D-Rob as D-line number four, if I had to pick. Because I think the guys that they have there, those, the two guys that they signed, Nichols and Jones, and then whoever plays nose, whether that's Lopez or Tonga, I hope D-Rob is D-line four.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how they deploy Nichols and Jones, and if they're, you know, kind of edge guys, big edge guys, or if they're interior guys. That's why I don't know, because it's just going to be interesting how this works out. If it's still more of like a 3-4 with Zaven being the like kind of edge guy, and then BJ Ojulari being the pass rush guy, or if they do a little change. I'm just interested to see, but I think Jones and Nichols will be one and two in some order in snaps, obviously all this barring health. And then I think by the end of the season, Robinson will be three, but I think in that same breath, he'll be the D line four. And what will happen is he'll probably rotate in for both Nichols and Jones in those situations.
At edge, it's going to be interesting, the rotation that they have there. But ultimately, I want the top two to be Zaven Ojulari. I think it will be that, although it might be Gardeck still early on.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how they deploy this and what happens with BJ and what his reps look like. Because obviously injury coming back, all the stuff he dealt with before the season to get, to get healthy and get to where he was. And now he's got a full off season. Like, how does that deploy itself?
And he's gotten bigger. He's added about 10 pounds to him. He's in the 250s pushing 260, which puts him at a much meatier size to, you know, putting him near Zaven's size to set the edge. And that was what they basically challenged him to do, is to be bigger and stronger for setting the edge. That way he can be more of a three-down player. Then you've got Gardeck in the mix, but he'll have places because he is a situational pass rusher. He can do more than that. He's a good guy to have on the field. And then after that, it's just kind of there. But I'm guessing that the inside backers will be Kaiser White and Mac Wilson. And I think that's how I'd want it, too. I don't know if I'd want it any other way in terms of, though. Although I do expect that Wilson won't be 100% type snap guy. The way the Cardinals deploy their defense a lot of times in nickel is that rather than pulling the the nose, like a traditional 3-4 does, they will pull one of the backers and leave that five-man front. So you've got a big nickel where Kaiser stays on the field basically 100% of the time, and that second linebacker spot ends up getting 60-ish percent of the snaps. And I think and I hope that's how it is, because it means Kaiser's healthy and that Mac Wilson is what they envisioned him to be when they signed him.
Yeah, and I think that's how it's going to become as things go along. I don't see Mac, again, barring injuries, seeing more than, I mean, maybe 70% of the snaps, and I think it'll probably be around that 60-65, like you said.
At cornerback, this is the interesting one, because you've got Sean Murphy Bunton, you've got Garrett Williams, then you've got Max Mellon, you've got Elijah Jones, you've got Starling Marte, that's the Diamondbacks before, you've got Starling Thomas, who was basically a starter over the last year. And I'm going to be really, really intrigued to see how he plays into things, if he can continue to push. I'm going to say, from what I saw yesterday, keep an eye on Thomas as a guy to watch in training camp. Watch Thomas and see how he's used in training camp. I think that it will go with the three-corner rotation, that it'll be Murphy, Bunting, Williams, and Melton. I think that's how I'd like it. I don't know how I'd want to see that deployed, whether Williams is going to be inside, outside, or just slot, but I think that's how it's going to be, and that's how I kind of want it to be, although ideally I would love to see Garrett Williams in year two be able to do inside, outside, so he essentially never comes off the field. You've always got Murphy Bunting, you've always got Williams, and then you bring in Melton for nickel, whether he's playing inside or whether you slide Williams inside, either way. That's how I want it.
I think that's how everybody wants it. You want to see, Max Melton and Garrett Williams be the guys, right? And then Sean Murphy Bunting be the third guy. And like you said, it doesn't matter how or where they play, but those three guys be on the field. But you want, ideally, Max and Garrett Williams to be the guys, because we know what Sean Murphy Bunting is. And if he's your third corner, then your corner room is really good, right? If he's your second corner, it's not terrible, but it's not, it's definitely average, which is still way above pace from last year. If he's your number one corner, you're looking at it and you're going, okay, we have a lot of young guys, so at least that's the excuse that we're going to start with. And then if he's your number one corner for the whole season and everybody's healthy, you go, these guys, we want to see more progression from these guys, right?
Yeah. And then at safety, like, we know it's going to be Buddha and Jalen. They're going to be the starters. The questions at number three, the questions at number four, whether it's going to be Sasha Ray and then Rabbit, or Rabbit than Sasha Ray, Rabbit than Blunt. I think in a perfect world, and I think ideally, it might be that Sasha Ray might be safety three when the season starts, but not long after that. I'd love to see Taylor Demerson win that job right away.
Yeah, immediately. That would be ideal.
It would be great. It'll probably be Sasha Ray first.
Right. And you're talking about a fourth round rookie, and that's unfair to expect him to be able to just come out the gate and be number three. Now, if he does it, it's similar to the Isaiah Adams conversation.
Like, yeah, exactly. Exactly.
If he comes out and wins the job, you're like, hell yeah, that's a great pick. If he doesn't, you're like, it's not a big deal, because again, he's a fourth round pick. It's not, for every one-off guy like Tolona Hufanga, who's a sixth round or fifth round pick and ends up being great, most of these guys go 3 or 4 years before they can reach that level, right? I mean, hell, even Buda Baker was a special teams ace as his rookie season before he started to become a guy. So you just look at it from that perspective. I think that's how you have to, you hope that he does it, but if he doesn't, it's not unexpected. And just the hope is by the end of the year, he is the true number three safety.
And then there's one other position, and that's a long snapper. Who do you think will be the guy? Who do you want to be the guy? Personally, it doesn't matter to me. Aaron Brewer, I think, will be the guy. I wouldn't care if Shimko does it, because if he won it, that means that Jeff Rogers really trusts him. But I think it'll be Brewer.
Yeah, I agree. The biggest thing to me is if it is Shimko, you hope that's Jeff Rogers' decision, and we have no reason to think it's not. But we hope that it's Jeff Rogers' decision and not something that's like, hey, let's move on from this, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Because, like, financially, we're talking about $250,000 is the difference. It's basically that's not something that you –
right.
It's not significant, hey, salary-slashing move, because long
well, especially when they just
money.
Especially when they just added $16 million.
Yeah, that's right. They got cap space. They got lots of cap space. Coming up next on the Razorbacks here at Podcast, Mr. Cardinals Talk on the Web. Let's talk about who we believe and who the Cardinals need to break out in 2024. That's coming up next on Razorbacks Red. We're back on the Razorbacks here at Podcast, Mr. Cardinals Talk on the Web. Breakout players for 2024. There are players that we think will break out, and there's also players that the Cardinals actually really need to break out. If we're looking on the offensive side of the ball, who do you think will break out, and who do you think they absolutely need to break out?
I mean, are we going to say Marvin Harrison Jr. breaks out? I don't know. Like, or that he just...
I'd like to say that. Like, I think I'm going to exclude rookies from this idea, because, like, literally anything he does is like, breaking out unless he's a complete bust.
Right. So I think you look at it, I think the first guy, and this might sound weird, but I think they need Kyler Murray to break out, in the sense of, like, he needs to put together, and I'm not going to say 17 games of, you know, being great, but, like, he needs to put together a season where beginning, middle, and end, he's playing at a high level.
Well, consistent. Honestly, like, we've seen him play MVP level football. That would be, if he plays near that level for a whole season, rather than, because, like, 2020, five-game stretch, looked like an MVP. 2021, the first half of this season, looked like an MVP. And then last year, he was very average to above average until the final three games. And then you're like, if we can get the three final games consistently over 16 games, I consider that a breakout, or maybe not necessarily breakout, because he has been an MVP level type player. That would be more bounce back technically, but nonetheless, fair assessment. They need that out of Kyler Murray. They don't need MVP Kyler, but they need high level quarterback Kyler.
Right.
They need that. Paris Johnson, I'm going to say, is a guy that they really could use breaking out. He gets to move from the right to the left side. So he's not going to have the sort of the rookie things. He got his rookie lumps out of the way, but now he's moved to the left side where he's kind of natural at. Wouldn't it be great if he breaks out and establishes himself as a top, like, we're not talking Trent Williams level, but, like, he is, like, the young left tackle in the league.
Yeah, that would be great if he's the guy that stands out above all others as the ascending left tackle in the league.
At receiver, you have to look at Michael Wilson and think that he could break out. I don't think they need him to break out, because they have safety nets behind him. We know Marv's going to have, we assume Marv's going to be probably their top productive receiver. They've also got Zay Jones, they've got Greg Dortch. So I think Zay Jones wouldn't be a breakout player, because he had over 800 yards two seasons ago. Like, he might have a bounce back year, but Michael Wilson is a guy you could see break out. He's got to stay healthy. When he was healthy, he was productive. And now he's in year two. So, you know, if he could be if he could produce at like Christian Kirk level production when like when Kirk was here, I'd say that would be breakout worthy.
Yeah,
they don't need him to, but they need they do need somebody to break out or bounce back. So if Wilson doesn't do it, they need it from Dortch, or they need the bounce back year from Jones. That it's that I'm going to put that caveat that way.
Yeah, exactly. They need one or the other. So you got to have somebody that breaks out in this situation.
I don't think.
I mean, can we? I was going to say, can you say Trey McBride? Like he kind of already broke out.
He's a star,
right?
Now.
Like
he's a star.
I think you need him to maintain that level and yes. be a top 5 to 7 tight end in the NFL.
Yes, but I don't think on offense that you go to the defensive side of the ball. You look at B.J. Ojulari as a potential breakout guy, but like I mean, honestly, do they need? They need both Zaven and Ojulari to break out as pass rushers.
I was going to say they. Here's what they need. They need 2 of 3. They need either, like you said, Zaven and B.J. Zaven, and I know we said no rookies, but Darius or Darius and B.J. Like 2 of those guys. Like if you get the same level of play that they have been getting from Bilal Nichols and Justin Jones, then you're fine. And then you just need 2 of those guys, 2 of those 3 to break out, and all of a sudden they become much better, right?
And I'm going to point to Justin Jones. Like, he showed last year for the first time some pass rushing punch. Okay, take that to the next level. We're not talking like 9-10 sacks, but take that 4.5, take it to 7 or 8, okay? Take the quarterback hits up to 25. I kind of think if you can get between Robinson doing something, if you get 2 out of the 3, Zaven, Ojulari, and Justin Jones, producing at a much higher level or at kind of breaking out pass rushing wise, you're in a good spot. You're in a really good spot. But they need pass rush. They need sacks, man. They need sacks.
And then I think we're in the same conversation though with the corners, right? We've already we went over all the corners, but they really need one of Max Melton or Garrett Williams to stand out.
Yes. And Williams I think is in a good spot because one, look at what he did in the second half of the season. He might have been, right, the most consistent cornerback the Cardinals had over the second half of the season. And he did that as a rookie coming off an ACL when he had no offseason reps. That's fantastic.
Right.
And so while I'd love for Melton to break out, like I'm looking at Gary Williams. He would be a great guy to have emerge. And especially because of the number of defensive backs that the Cardinals have drafted over the last 2 seasons, after the last 2 years, it would give an air of confidence to the front office in terms of defensive backs, right? So if you get right. Garrett Williams break, because Keytrell Clark looked like a stud coming out of the preseason, and then he got buried in the playing rotation. If Garrett Williams develops into a starter level, like a solid starting cornerback, and they do that with a round 3 pick, and then you feel that confidence about them, and you see some development from Melton, maybe Elijah Jones, maybe a boost from Keytrell Clark this year, or even Starling Thomas, who was an undrafted rookie that they acquired off waivers, that would give the confidence in this front office and coaching staff for the traits that they're looking for in a defensive back. What we were waiting for that from the past coaching staff because they drafted Byron Murphy. He was pretty solid. And then kind of like we talked about after the draft when they drafted Marco Wilson, they traded up to get Marco Wilson, and Steve Kimes said they felt that they kind of had a potential steal in him. You know, like that was going to be kind of the defining mark of him as an evaluator. And that failed miserably. Well, that didn't fail, but he proved to be just as inconsistent a player as he was at Florida.
Yeah, and you know, they need somebody to consistently produce, right? Like, that's one of the things that you look at. And when you have these guys that are, I mean, I don't know.
We need the Buddha Baker of the cornerback room.
Right. But,
like,
but
someone
you don't
that
even
you
need...
can play, that you can get like producing and improving and kind of be a stalwart on that defense for 7-8 years.
Right. And that's the biggest thing is you just need somebody. I mean, you think about this and we talked about it the other day, like Byron Murphy wasn't bad by any means, but the fact that that was the only guy that they took a chance on after Patrick Peterson, like outside of Brandon Williams, who was a running back that turned in, like, it's just such a terrible allotment of draft capital. And you look at what this new regime has done, and they've kind of flipped that on its head. And obviously, you know, Garrett Williams was a third round pick, and then you've got Max this year, and then Elijah Jones was a third round pick. And it's like, they're taking it seriously, but is it a viable way to attack it, right? Is it like, do you have to find a star, or can you have a room full of good players who all just kind of feed off each other's ability? And yeah, you don't necessarily need that alpha. You don't need that lockdown corner one. Obviously, if one of those guys turns into one of those, that's great. But can you get away with having, you know, a bunch of really good guys that, you know, if you had three number twos but no number one, that would almost be better than having, right, a number one and then what the Cardinals had before, where it was like a rotating door of like who's going to do it next. So.
Right. And, you know, at safety, we don't need anybody breaking out because we've already seen breakout season from Jalen Thompson and Buddha Baker, and Matt Prater's been kicking forever, and Blake Gillikin as a punter, I think you could say as a punter, broke out last year. So, yeah, I think that kind of wraps that up, you know?
Yeah, and it'll be interesting as we go through this and, like, figure out how this all comes together, you know, because there are so many unknowns still, as we went over. Like, they need guys to break out. They need guys that have broken out to maintain a breakout or reestablish a breakout. It, you know, those are all things that, and they're taking these massive chances, and not in a negative way, but, you know, these massive chances on guys like Paris Johnson Jr., like, you know, Garrett Williams, things like that, where before it was always like, well, you know, DJ's good enough. And we have Patrick Peterson. So you don't need somebody else, right? Like, so now it's completely different. So we'll see how that goes.
And with that, we will wrap up this edition of the Rise of Syriot podcast, the Bizarre Cardinals Talk Club. This is episode 544. Seth and I will be off for a couple of weeks at least, because I will be off in Europe. And then I will be back, well, in Texas and stuff, and some, I can probably record from there. I think you will get episode 545 that will publish with me and Howard in the next few days. I should be recording that later tonight. But until then, that's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Rue. This is the Rise of Syriot podcast. Thanks for listening, as always.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Syriot podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up, Sea Red.